The U.S. Department of Defense has stopped accepting most deliveries of F-35 jets from Lockheed Martin that cost nearly $95 million each. Sources telling Reuters Wednesday that the two parties had disputed over who would cover costs for fixing a production error found last year on more than 200 of the jets. The Pentagon stopped accepting F-35s for 30 days last fall after discovering corrosion on the planes. Once a fix had been devised, the deliveries resumed and Lockheed hit its target aircraft delivery numbers for 2017.
A house built by a robot. It took around 18 days for the Batiprint 3D to complete its part of the work on this house. And its creators from the French University of Nantes says it's the world's first home to be built with a 3D printer. Using a special polymer material, the robot printed the walls for this house. And Professor Benoit Furé says this could be the future of waste-free construction.
Ford is accelerating its rollout of Lincoln in China as a trade dispute ramps up between Beijing and Washington. The company has a lot to lose if it comes to a full-blown tariff war. China is the world's biggest market for cars. Ford is one of America's biggest car companies, and it's doing its best to boost sales there. Now Lincoln, which is Ford's premium auto brand, is planning to build as many as 5 new models in the country by 2022.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's April 12th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. We're glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell, and another business day is getting underway. And on the broadcast today, we're going to be talking about a little spring cleaning for your kitchen and pantry. I bet you have a lot of expired stuff in there. Do those dates really matter? Are they really what you should be following on food? We're going to have a food safety and inspection service rep with us from USDA this morning. And it's Thought Leader Thursday as well. Greg Warsek is here from Associated Bank. And we're going to be talking about the commercial real estate market in the Chicago area. So lots to talk about this morning. A couple of great conversations are coming up on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Asian shares sank today as investors digested the latest Fed minutes amid geopolitical concerns and possible strike on Syria by the United States. In Asia this morning, Japan's benchmark Nikkei is off about 27 points. Down just a fraction. The Shanghai is off almost 1%. The Hang Seng is down about 0.25%. In Europe, most of the markets there are higher, with the DAX in Germany up just a fraction and the market in France up just a fraction. The London market is off just a little bit this morning. Futures in this country are flat, trying to move higher. The Dow futures up about 23 right now. NASDAQ futures up about 14. S&P futures are just up about 4 points, so we're looking for some direction as we head to the opening bell later on this morning. Crude oil is at $66.80 a barrel, which is down about 2 cents. A couple of stories we're watching for you this morning. Senate Republicans are moving to confirm a former coal industry lobbyist as the second highest official at the Environmental Protection Agency. That would put him next in line if embattled Administrator Scott Pruitt were first forced out. A Senate vote could come as soon as today on the nomination of Andrew Wheeler to serve the EPA's deputy administrator role. Democrats and some Republicans are calling on President Trump to replace Pruitt, whose tenure has been threatened by damaging ethics disclosures. Democratic Senator Tom Udall of New Mexico has called on Republicans to delay a vote on Wheeler while lawmakers review his credentials to run the agency. Two Democratic senators from coal mining states, Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota, are expected to vote in Wheeler's favors. Takata Corporation, the Japanese airbag maker embroiled in a massive recall, says the acquisition by U.S. mobility safety supplier Key Safety Systems has been completed, and the president of the company has resigned. Takata's president resigned as the president and chairman moves in from the new company. Takata went into rehabilitation proceedings last year, slammed by massive costs and sales damage from defective Takata airbag inflators, which can explode with too much force and throw shrapnel into the vehicle driver's face and head, as well as passengers. At least 22 deaths, more than 180 injuries reported. It is Thought Leader Thursday. Greg Warsek is here from Associated Bank. Greg is the Senior Vice President, Senior Regional Manager for the Chicago Market for Commercial Real Estate at Associated Bank. And Greg, good morning. Welcome back to the opening bell.
Greg, good morning. Welcome back to the opening bell.
Good morning, Steve. Great to be here.
I wanted to talk a little bit about some real estate deals. We saw an article about some of the top real estate loans that have been happening in Chicago, and you're our go-to guy when it comes to this sort of stuff. Some of these deals and the numbers are pretty significant. Let me get your impression on the market generally as we see it now, if you had to give us a snapshot.
I would say right now the market is really stable and, you know, to positive. From a lending perspective, I would say the market is in sort of a nice equilibrium. It's working well. You know, construction lending is available, and permanent takeout is available from the life companies and conduit, the CMBS market. There's a robust investment sale market, a lot of properties being sold upon completion. So I would say that, definitely very positive from a lending perspective. You know, some of the projects you're alluding to are here in Chicago that were highlighted are certainly getting up into some dollar amounts that you are more used to seeing in New York. Mm-hmm. So there recently were a couple of billion-dollar loans executed for the Willis Tower and 500 West Madison. So
yeah, the realdeal.com had put a list of 10 of them together. That was on top. It was a refinance for the Willis Tower.
Yeah, it was $1 billion when Blackstone bought it, but as you know, they're redeveloping the entire ground floor retail around the perimeter of the building, which should completely change the building and, frankly, that entire submarket, that area. It's going to really, I think, ignite quite a bit of activity in that area.
Another property that a lot of folks are seeing this week, Wrigley Field. They did a refinance or finance on that of $525 million. That's sort of driving that whole neighborhood, isn't it?
Yeah, even the Cubs need to take out a loan. You can't do everything with cash, but that's obviously a very interesting redevelopment that they did, not just to the stadium, but adjacent to the stadium and the new hotel as well, so which is now open.
Yeah, didn't they buy, wasn't the purchase price that the Ricketts paid for all of that like $900 million? Or something like that.
It was $900
million. Yeah. So what do? Add those two together now and say that's the worth of all of this stuff?
Well, it depends. I mean, I think they have a separate real estate development arm where some of the real estate around Wrigley is being held in that development company. And so the question is, you know, how much would go with the Cubs if they ever elected to sell in terms of the real estate that is complementing the area, if you will, that they've acquired.
I'm going to go through a couple of others and see if any of these ring a bell to you. $470 million for 150 North Riverside Plaza.
And know it well. It's we're one of the banks involved in the bank syndicate that financed it.
What is that building?
It's I would say architecturally one of the coolest buildings that's been done in a long time. Where it comes up at a V from the base. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of green space, really cool architecture right on the river there, and the views from inside up and down the river are fantastic.
The other is the old post office complex, $355 million.
That the old post office is actually closer to 3 million square feet. That's an amazing facility, and I would guess if Amazon is interested in Chicago for H2Q, that's probably one that's pretty high on the list that could accommodate their space needs.
Is that would that go into the equation of deciding whether or not that loan gets approved? Is the fact that they're in the running for that?
That certainly makes it a little easier when a tenant like that signs a lease.
Let's talk about 1 South Dearborn, $235 million.
Yeah, that's a big one. It's a beautiful building. I guess the only thing I would say that is working against it is, it's more central loop. And mm-hmm. if you look at the rest of that list, it seems to have more of a west loop orientation to it in terms of the buildings right. that are listed.
They also have Sidley and Austin. That's the headquarters of the law firm Sidley and Austin.
Yeah, for now.
Yeah, for now. You know something that we...
Well, you never know. I mean, yeah. There's the law firms are big office space users in Chicago, and when new office buildings are being built, like there was just a new one announced at 110 North Wacker, there's it's a million four square feet in an outstanding location with a beautiful design, a Sidley in Austin becomes a target for relocating and actually downsizing.
Is 108 North State, the $225 million, is that Block 37?
That is Block 37.
What's going on there?
Well, on that deal, I think it's actually the air rights, which is even more interesting given the size of that deal.
And what do they mean by air rights for those of us who are...
It's the space that, in the case of that project, there were some components of the development that were actually built on top of the retail. So it was they sold the rights to sell above the retail.
As we look at these numbers and these properties, it looks like a healthy market if these loans are being approved.
Yeah, it's, you know, a lot of those deals we just talked about are some of the nicest Class A product that's going on in Chicago, quite honestly, in terms of the office buildings. So I think, you know, with A buildings, with A sponsorship, access to capital is going to continue to be available.
It would probably take us forever to go through every part of the Chicago area to see if this sort of filters out into the suburbs and surrounding areas. But is it fair to say the whole area is seeing this kind of good work?
It is. It is. It's. I would say we're very busy right now, and you know, all indications are that things will continue to be positive at least out for the next 12 to 18 months, despite, you know, expected interest rate bumps. I think there's still a high level of confidence in the commercial real estate community.
Let's talk about Fulton Market. That whole area, too, is still in our spotlight as we see what's happening there. And I know that there was some development happening with dorm-style apartments that are going to open up over there. What's that about?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. You know, we've been watching this whole co-work concept with WeWork and others that and I think, you know, it's really taken off from an office-based perspective, and now you're starting to see, you know, the WeWorks now have WeLiving. Mm-hmm. So they're moving into the residential space, and, you know, the concept is very similar in that an operator comes in, they lease the entire space under a master lease from the building owner, and then they turn around and lease out, in this case, a smaller living space, if you will, with roommates for what we call a lower chunk price. So in the case that you're referring to, it's a 75-unit apartment building. They decided to execute a lease with a European company that specializes in this type of business. And the target is to ultimately lease those 75 units to various roommates, totaling 175 renters.
Wow.
So you can kind of do the math, and what they're basically doing is it's kind of a dorm-style approach to residential living, and the whole idea is affordability. That's the big thing in the big cities right now is how do these college grads, professionals coming out, live affordably in good locations in big cities near where they're working.
In addition to, you know, saving money on all of that, some of these places offer, you know, leases that could be like month to month. There's like no big move-in deal that goes on. Is this communal living thing, is this going to take hold?
I would not bet against it because I use this term a lot. It's chunk price. It's when you're a college student with student debt and you can go out and live in Fulton Market for $1,200 a month. It includes your utilities, your internet access, and it's turnkey. I mean, some of the units that they offer are, you know, your mattress, your bed linens, everything. It's fully furnished, you know, versus, say, that same person having to get roommates and go out to Logan Square or, you know, or some other area to achieve cheaper rents. I think there's... I get the business thesis, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah, we're not talking about communal showers and sharing a couch out in the TV room, are we?
I hope not, but you know, a lot of the operators that are bringing these new concepts, and the one you're referring to, it's European companies that this has worked well in Europe. It's worked well in New York, and now it's coming to Chicago.
And along those lines, I saw this thing, and I just and I know you've been talking about it too. Found Chicago Hotel, this hotel that's basically a bed and a bathroom for $24 a night.
Yeah, there's a lot of new interesting concepts. And again, it's a lot of out of area, out of the country sponsors coming in and trying these new concepts that work elsewhere. And they're interesting, and we're monitoring them, but it's tough to underwrite from a lender's perspective.
Yeah. I know as I watched some of this stuff, I was thinking in the back of my head, this sounds like a good investment potentially.
Potentially.
So people are out there looking to put money in a place. I wanted to close out today by talking to you about how this real estate firm in Chicago has bought up some properties owned by the city of Hartford in Connecticut. What's up with that?
I think a lot of, Chicago is sort of a hotbed for real estate companies, and a lot of them operate locally, regionally, nationally. And in this case, it's a fund that's likes to do, triple net investments. And in this case, it's a creative situation where they've approached, the state about doing sale leasebacks of some of their buildings. And so it's a way for the state to free up capital. And it's similar to what Illinois is doing in terms of looking at some of their real estate holdings and saying, is this really a good use of our capital given some of our financial challenges?
And that's one that we can stay tuned and watch a little closer, because if that works, that might be a way to solve some of Illinois' problems.
It could be.
Greg, it's always good chatting with you. We'll see you next time.
Sounds good, Steve.
All right. Greg Worsak is the Senior Vice President and Regional Manager for the Chicago Market for Commercial Real Estate at Associated Bank. He's our thought leader today. We're going to continue our conversation after the bell with Greg, and we'll post that in the podcast of the opening bell later this morning at WGNradio.com.
Hi, this is Catherine Davis with today's NO Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know. Delivered by ChicagoNO.com. In the first quarter of 2018, more than $375 million was invested across 36 deals in Illinois companies, the best Q1 in terms of total venture funding since the first quarter of 2000, according to a new MoneyTree report. In the first quarters of 2017 and 2016, $188 million and $345 million were invested across 30 and 39 deals, respectively. Local billionaire Ken Griffin is donating $10 million to the UChicago Crime Lab, which collects and analyzes gunshot data to help combat gun violence. Griffin said the Crime Lab's program has had a powerful impact on reducing violent crime. And Glenn Tolman's healthcare startup Livongo Health raised $105 million to grow its business. Livongo, a startup focused on diabetes and other chronic health conditions, is based in Mountain View but has a large second office in Chicago. That's today's NO Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoNO.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Did you know that every year in the United States, foodborne illness results in about 128,000 hospitalizations and 3,000 deaths in the United States? It is probably a major concern among many of you who probably don't go through your kitchen and pantry enough to look at dates on things. We welcome in with us this morning Adam Gehring from the United States Department of Agriculture Food Safety and Inspection Service Group. Adam, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Hi, Steve. Glad to be here this morning.
So this idea that we should be spring cleaning our kitchen and pantry is a good one. What should we be looking for?
Yeah, so this time of the year is a great time to focus on just the foods that you have in your refrigerator or pantry. We always, throughout the year, recommend our four steps of food safety: clean, separate, cook, and chill. And this is the spring cleaning is a great time to remember to also focus on your refrigerator. So one of the things that we really focus on for the spring is just making sure that you're following the steps to make sure that your fridge doesn't get dirty and potentially contaminated in the first place. So with that, we always talk about cleaning spills immediately. So in your refrigerator, the best thing to use is warm, soapy water if you have any spills, and then clean those immediately, or excuse me, rinse the water off. You don't want to use those solvent cleaning agents or abrasives just because you can have fumes and whatnot in your refrigerator, and you don't want those getting into your foods potentially. The other thing as well is to make sure when you do put foods in there, you do store those safely. So if you're defrosting any meats, you put those in a pan or a tray, just so if there's any juices that drip off those meat or poultry items while they're defrosting. They catch into the pan and they don't drip onto the foods below. So those are some of the big things to make sure you prevent those juices from dripping, from getting any nasty spots in your fridge, what have you.
Another big part of this is reviewing the sell-by and use-by dates on whatever you may have. This is always very confusing to people because I don't think everyone understands what those mean. Can you give us a quick course in that right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So the there's a couple different terms out there. The main one that you'll see is the use-by. So that particular date, the use-by date, indicates that perishable products should be consumed by the date listed on the package or discarded once that date has passed. So that's use-by date. Best if used by, so it's basically just adding a little bit of language there. Best if used by informs shoppers that after the specified date, the shelf product is safe to consume but has exceeded the window of its optimal taste or performance. So you can use products past the best if used by. You just lose a little bit of quality. And then on the other side, the sell-by date, that's just the date that is used for the retailers or your grocery store or wherever you're buying that food product from that lets them know the peak quality time. So you can eat those foods after the sell-by date, depending on the food. And the best way to know how long you can keep those foods in your refrigerator or pantry at home is by using our free mobile app called the Food Keeper app. So the Food Keeper app has now over 600 different foods. It's really great. I use it all the time. So you can download it for your any mobile device. You can get it from the Google Play and the Apple Store. And it basically lets you know how long those foods are good for. You can actually set reminders. So let's say we bought some, let's say we're going to go grilling this weekend and we bought some ribeyes today. It'll let you know that it's good for 3 to 5 days in your refrigerator. And after those 3 to 5 days, it'll give you an automatic notification to use or freeze those steaks. So that's a really good way to know how long they will be safe for.
I think I'm always confused by the sell-by part of it because I know, mm-hmm. milk, I think, has the sell-by date. So you see a sell-by, let's say it's today's date, 4/12. How long would that milk be good in a refrigerator for? Another couple of days, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah, so usually most dairy products are a week.
Week.
So that's usually the case for most dairy products.
The way that refrigerators are put together these days, sometimes we don't see those spills because they fall behind the crisper or whatever. Do you recommend at least once a year getting in there and taking all of the everything out of your refrigerator and cleaning it?
Yeah, absolutely. Making sure you get all the shelves, all the crispers, all in any doors. If you have a little removable doors, you can take those out. And if you have a sink, you can wash those just like you would the dishes. We do have some information if you can't get that any of those smells, lingering smells out there. We do have some tricks of the trade, if you will. One of the interesting ones that I always think about is you can sprinkle fresh coffee grounds or baking soda loosely in a large container and then put that at the bottom of the refrigerator and kind of let that sit in there, and that'll absorb some of the odors. And the other thing that you can do as well is place a cotton swab soaked with vanilla inside the refrigerator or freezer, close the door for 20 hours, and then check the odors. And sometimes that kind of helps to get any lingering odors if you had something that was in there for a really long time and you had some spoilage that was kind of lingering in your refrigerator, if you will.
Yeah, that's a good one. And then from there on out, your refrigerator smells like vanilla.
Yeah, that's better than, rotten meat.
You know, I grew up in a house where my mother used to put a box of baking soda and put it in the refrigerator. Is that still good advice, or does that even work at all?
Yeah, absolutely. That's another great way to absorb odors. So it'll keep your refrigerator smelling fresh. So you can just basically put that on any particular shelf you'd like. And then just in refrigerators in general, to make sure you don't have a lot of spoilage bacteria and or pathogenic disease-causing bacteria, your refrigerator, you want to make sure you keep that set at 40 degrees and below. So you can use an appliance thermometer, or if your refrigerator has one of the thermometer gauges on it where it tells you the actual temperature, you just want to make sure that's 40 degrees or below. So that's another good way to kind of limit that bacterial growth in your refrigerator, keeping it nice and cold.
Adam, in preparation for our interview today, I went home and was going through my pantry yesterday, and I have to admit, and I'm not proud of this. I found a couple of cans of soup that were dated. One of them was dated 2015, and the other was 2014. I'm guessing those cans of soup are not any good anymore.
Well, actually, most of those cans, I mean, they'll stay safe after that time. They might lose their best taste, if you will. They'll be safe. So if they're commercially processed cans, what we say, as long as the can's not bulging or swelling or leaking in any manner, they still should be safe to eat. They're not going to be the top quality as far as taste. But if you did have your home canned goods, we only recommend storing those for 1 year. And on that same idea, we also say that if you do have foods in your freezer, if your freezer is set at 0 degrees and below, and you have those foods in your freezer, they will be safe indefinitely as well. So if you have a turkey that's in there, let's say a couple years, it'll be safe to eat. It might not be the best quality, but it will be something that you could safely eat, though.
I mentioned at the opening of our interview that this foodborne illness causes a lot of hospitalizations every year, 3,000 deaths annually. How do we know when we have a foodborne illness versus just a stomach ache?
It's difficult to know exactly if you do or do not. That's what kind of makes things tricky for individuals to know if they have it. And sometimes they'll go out and they'll think it was something they immediately or previously just ate right after they start getting symptoms. And that's not always necessarily the case. It just kind of depends on the type of bacteria, the individual themselves. So some people might get symptoms much sooner or much later than other individuals, and it might be a little bit different. So that's why we always stress the importance of prevention in regards to food safety. And just going back to those four steps, clean. So wash your hands for 20 seconds anytime you touch any foods. Anytime after you go to the bathroom, always separate your raw meat from your fruits and vegetables, so you don't want those raw meat juices to touch those fruits and vegetables and those foods that you're not necessarily going to cook before you eat. And then the third step, cook. Always use a food thermometer when you cook meat and poultry to make sure that the meat's safe for sure. So you can't just see the bacteria, so you have to use a food thermometer. You can't use color. So if you're cooking whole cuts of red meat, that's 145 degrees with a 3-minute rest. If you're cooking hamburgers or any ground... Go ahead.
No, please finish.
Okay, yeah, so it's 160 degrees for any ground meat, and then all poultry is 165 degrees. And the final step, chill, is to chill those foods within 2 hours after eating. So once we're done cooking those, we want to get those in the refrigerator within those 2 hours. And during the summertime, hopefully the summertime finally gets here, if the temperature is 90 degrees or above, you want to refrigerate those foods within 1 hour.
You mentioned the Food Keeper app. The USD is always great, too, about answering questions. And you have a couple of hotlines and places to go online for those. Can you remind us what those are?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a toll-free hotline. It's called the USDA's Meat and Poultry Hotline. So that's open Monday through Friday, every day except for the federal holidays, except for Thanksgiving Day. We are open Thanksgiving Day, and that number is 1-888-MP-HOTLINE, and that's open 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. We also have what we call the Ask Karen application, so that's a great tool if you have any specific questions. That's available 24/7. So it's at askkaren.gov, and you just go on there, and we've got thousands of different questions and answers that you can look up as well. And then you can also go on to foodsafety.gov, which is a great resource from us here at the USDA, CDC, and the FDA that has all sorts of great food safety information as well.
Adam, good of you to be with us this morning. Thanks for all the great information, helping keep our food and all of us safe and not hungry. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Yep, no problem. Thank you for having me, Steve.
Adam Gehring is with the USDA Food Safety and Inspection Service Group, and we'll repeat those numbers for you again. That hotline, the Meat and Poultry Hotline, is 1-888-MP-HOTLINE, and you can head over to askkaren.gov for food safety chat. Foodsafety.gov is the website, and make sure you follow them on Twitter at USDA Food Safety.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures now pushing higher, up about 98 points. S&P futures are up about 11, and NASDAQ futures are up about 32. So we're looking for a positive open a little bit later this morning on Wall Street. Let's find out what's happening in agriculture and commodities this morning. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. We continue to look to South America and Argentina and the impact of the drought we've been talking about for the past several months. I mentioned earlier this week that Argentina booked the largest U.S. soybean imports in 20 years. Well, they were back in the market again today for, or I should say yesterday, for U.S. soybeans. Argentina purchased 120,000 tons of soybeans from the U.S. delivery 2018-19, and yesterday China bought 132,000 tons of U.S. soybeans for the year 2018-19. Wheat ended lower, plentiful world supplies, and even despite the Argentine soy purchases, the soy market ended lower. Soft red winter wheat may settle down 4¾ cents, 487¼. And the story in the soybean market at the Board of Corn Futures yesterday, down in technically driven trade, and soybean futures also turning lower. Meanwhile, livestock trade at the Mercantile Exchange saw live cattle contracts close firmer yesterday. Investors digesting initial prices for cash cattle. Man, they're bracing yet for hefty supplies ahead that we're going to see impacting the retail market. So we still are waiting to plant some corn here in the Midwest. We'll keep you posted on that. But have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, April the 12th. Some major economic reports due out today include Freddie Mac releasing its report on average mortgage rates, so this week's average mortgage rates. We'll also get a snapshot of jobless claims, import and export prices report due today, the EIA natural gas report, and money supply report all due out. And we have some earnings, too, to tell you about. BlackRock, Delta, and Rite Aid earnings today as we begin earnings season in earnest. Tomorrow, banks begin their earnings with Citi, J.P. Morgan, PNC, and Wells Fargo. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, April the 12th.